What's up, Internet? Welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardwar. This week, we've got a whole bunch of news. It's Switch 2 launch day, so we've got Senior Writer Sam Rutherford here to talk about all that. Hey, Sam.
Hey, how's it going?
It's also the week before WWDC 2025, so we've got Nathan Ingram here as well to dive into what we expect there. Hey, Nate.
Good morning.
Good morning. And we also have podcast producer Ben Ellman here, as always. Hey, Ben.
Off screen on the stream, but still on screen in our hearts.
This is going to be a big one. So also, if you're listening to the audio version of this show, folks, go check out our live stream, because first of all, it took a lot of trouble to get that back together. But also, we're going to be showing off devices, and you'll get to see some comparisons of all these different Switches and everything. I've got a Switch 2. Sam has a Switch 2. Nate seems ambivalent. I don't know about you, Ben. But we're going to do a whole bunch of device comparison and thoughts. As always, folks, if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes. Drop us an email at podcast@engadget.com. So the Switch 2 is here. I feel like, Sam, you must be sick of this thing by now, because you've written, what, like 10,000 words at this point? Multiple previews?
It feels like that. Yeah. I'm just like happy for it to be out. I am both... sent me a picture last night. We were both out at midnight launches because you wanted to get one, and I was going to the flagship Nintendo store in New York City to
cover
the launch and, you know, see how that was going. And it's just like, you know, you mentioned it, it's been kind of weird, but like, you know, people are definitely hyped. The hype is definitely real.
Well, the people who line up for a midnight console launch are certainly hyped. And I did it because, so first of all, I lined up at my local Best Buy, which is like 20 minutes away. And I wasn't able to get an online pre-order early.
Me neither.
Just a whole bunch of stuff, you know, and I figured this would be a good way to get it. And also, it harkens back to the olden times. Like, all of you guys, have you ever done midnight movie screenings, like back in college or in high school? I remember when the Lord of the Rings movies were coming out. Like, I did midnight screenings for all of those. And this is like a reminder of that old school communal aspect of just people nerding out, letting their, you know, geek flags fly a little bit. It's fun to be around Nintendo nerds for, you know, small periods of time. I enjoyed the experience, but how was it for you, Sam?
It was good. I mean, at the flagship store, there was a line that was almost a full block long in the Nintendo store. And so there was quite a few people. There's also like a section for people who had pre-orders, and there was a lot of people, like, you know, there's some Twitch streamers in there. And so they were like, there was some people who were dressed up and they were kind of going buck wild, and they were having a good time. And then I was able to go inside. Doug Bowser, Nintendo President of America, was there.
What an aptonym. Still. Yeah.
I still don't understand how he got that job and what world.
Because his last name is Bowser.
Yeah.
But also, like, why does he have all the launches? He should be dressed like Bowser from the Mario Brothers movie, the live action one. So it's Dennis Hopper.
They don't want to bring that back up. They have a new Super Mario Brothers movie that is very good looking. They want to pretend that thing ever existed. But, you know, there was some, I mentioned on we're kind of doing a live blog today, too, for the Switch launch. And I mentioned that, like, Bowen Yang from SNL was there.
Oh, nice.
And there's some other, Scott the Waz YouTuber was there. And there's some other YouTubers that I don't know. I can't, you know, there's too many YouTubers to keep track of nowadays.
Everyone's producing content in these lines. That is a big difference from the old lines. And also shout out to our own content queen. Sherlyn Lowe is in line right now at her local GameStop as well. So
literally, she's live tweeting it to us in the live stream chat.
Does she have it yet?
No.
I think she was like next up in line last time I checked.
Yeah, she said there was only like a handful, like there were like five, I think less than 10 people ahead of her.
So that's surprising.
Honestly, that's like the kind of like hack, is that if you have the ability and you weren't able to snag an online pre-lord order like me and Devendra weren't, putting that like sweat equity in and going to the physical stores, you have such a better chance than just sitting at home online, refreshing and hoping websites don't crash.
Basically.
Yeah, I don't know how accurate my Target listings were, but this morning... a bunch of stores near me said they had it in stock, that changed in the last hour or so. But like, I feel like I could have gotten up and done that.
When I woke up this morning, people were saying there's still stock online at Costco. So if you have a membership, maybe check that out if you haven't been able to find one.
That was my plan. That was my plan, either do online at Costco or go to the store early this morning. And I just felt like I saw the midnight launch stuff. So I was like, that could be fun just to be around the nerds again. And I met people, like I met a cloud engineer at Google. I met somebody who works in cryogenics freezing engineering. And we had a lot of good geeky conversations. So that communal aspect is totally back. Sherlyn, I hope, got to talk to you, the people next to her.
But yeah, I had a great time at the Nintendo store. I'm just like, the midnight launch is like, I feel like I'm getting old. It was like the most obvious sign of just like, man, I was trying to like be excited and amped because like, you know, everybody else was. And I'm like, but I feel tired, you know.
But also like you've had so much time with this thing. You've had hours with the Switch 2 already, Sam, right? Like previewing it.
Yeah, I think it was like, I told myself it was like between 15 and 16 hours even before, you know, the thing actually went on sale. You know, we have
everyone
unboxing
else there.
On our Instagram right now. So go check that out if you, you know, are curious about what is inside the box.
Everyone else in that line is like dying to even try it once, you know? So it's like you don't have that same enthusiasm. But what was your setup, Sam? Did you prepare? Did you have a lawn chair? Did you have snacks? Or did you just like wing it?
No, you know, luckily, because I was media, I was able to skip part of the line. So I was able to go and kind of like get inside so I could shoot photos and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, unlike some of the Pokemon, they said there's a couple people, they even had some of the Nintendo store employees told me that some people have been camped out for months, even though they had pre-orders. So they're just doing it for the funsies, like literally, like they weren't trying to secure a console. They were just like out there for the party.
Yeah, that's like a South Park line, right? How do you defeat that which has no life? Hey, Nintendo fans, I love you. First off, I know our time is kind of limited today because everybody's super busy. Sam, you got to work on this review. Overall thoughts, Sam. You spend a lot of time with the Switch 2. You've done multiple previews. Go check out Sam's final preview until our review is ready. Basically, everybody, it seems like all media sites have previews. I haven't checked everywhere, but the thinking was that you just talking to folks in other places, it didn't seem like Nintendo put out review hardware.
No. And in the last couple of days, Nintendo was a little bit more clear about it and saying, hey, no one, no media, no one, no influencers got pre-launch devices. Aside from maybe some people got them like literally yesterday. But usually, you know, we get a week or two at least, especially for big, you know, big ticket items
for
like
a console,
this.
I
could check them out and use them. And so no one got any of that. So, you know, pretty much everyone's on the same playing field. And at least for my early impressions, the short and skinny of it is the Switch 2 is more of everything you like about the Switch, and it's been polished, it's faster, you know, they have, you know, refined the components, you have the, you know, magnetic Joy-Cons instead of kind of that sliding attachment system, which I gotta say is so nice. You press the button, you take it off, and that's it. Although one little
let me tell you, Sam, let's just spend a little time on that, because the sliding Joy-Con or the magnetic Joy-Con is the first thing you do with the Switch 2 when you open it, because it's all disassembled in the box. That thunk of this thing connecting to a magnetic connection is just so satisfying.
Yeah. Like, not even low key, it's just like one of like the biggest upgrades on that, just like in terms of just like overall usability.
Ooh, yeah, that
but
sounds
you know what's
good.
What's funny is that they made the snap of the Joy-Cons into the original Switch like such a thing, like in the marketing, they're always
it
like
the click.
And like, yeah,
it
so now it's got the funk that. Instead.
But listen to this. Listen to this. And what it feels like permanent. And the thing about the sliding Joy-Cons before is like, even with the first Switch, like the minute I put them on the first time, I was like, this is not stable. This is going to slide off eventually. I think most people notice like the sliding mechanism breaks or it wears down. These magnets feel good.
They
sound
so much
good.
Better.
Like Nintendo has just like polished the overall design of this thing so well. So yeah, go ahead, Sam. Keep going.
And then next is kind of the display. You know, it's obviously bigger. I think it's 7.9 inches if I'm remembering the specs correctly. And it has HDR. So I was doing some early but kind of display brightness testing this morning. And while it is HDR, it's kind of on the low end of like the HDR range, because we're kind of talking about 400 nits, maybe up to 450 nits, 500 nits, depending on the title. And it's really hard because my light meter, it kind of needs ideally, it needs to be able to have like an internet browser to run through some of the test patterns and stuff like that. So I had to kind of fudge it. So my numbers aren't going to be the most precise, But I kind of found, you know, depending on ambient brightness and if you turn it all the way up, you're looking at between 400 and maybe 500 nits, depending on like the specific title. So it is HDR, but it's kind of on the lower end of the HDR, which I think everyone was kind of expecting just given how expensive HDR technology is right now.
That's how PC monitors don't typically give you HDR really beyond 500 nits. So it's typically HDR 400. Maybe you get peaks beyond that, but
yeah, it's more, that mostly is not on the smartphones unusual. Where you're seeing like 1,000 nit peak brightness or higher.
And TVs. Yeah, yeah.
And then one interesting quirk, I don't know if you noticed on the dock, there's actually one less USB port on the dock. And what's really interesting is that Nintendo has kind of made up for that because now there's two USB-C ports on the console itself. There's one on the bottom, one on the top. For anyone who's curious, only the one on the bottom supports video out. So that's kind of helpful to know. But one interesting thing is that the dock is that there's one USB-C port on kind of the inside where you kind of connect the AC adapter, and there's two USB-A ports on the outside. And where that gets a little awkward is that if you bought the Nintendo Switch 2 camera, the Switch 2 camera comes with a USB-C cable, and so there's actually nowhere to plug it into the dock directly. you can plug it into the kind of open port on the top of the Switch itself.
Right, right.
But it's awkward because if you're taking the, you know, Switch 2 in and out of the dock, then you also have to disconnect the camera. And so you might need actually kind of a hub if you have like multiple Nintendo Switch accessories. And then obviously you have to keep the dock plugged in to AC power because that's how, you know.
That feels
wait,
like the
I
dock
finally
team not
have a
to
use
the
for
team.
The. Mm-hmm. USB-C to USB-A adapters that I accidentally bought because I wanted to get USB-A to USB-C.
Yeah, or if you but have also, some, you know, USB-A to USB-C cables lying around, those might come in handy.
Those may work. Those are iffy, though. The adapters don't always get the throughput you need. Like, USB-C is a very, very iffy spec, especially for a camera. So there's a chance, like, devices just don't work. Microphones have issues with it. Cameras have issues with it, from what I've seen.
One bit of trivia. Almost no one is asking for this, but I decided because the Switch 1 carts tasted bad, I decided to do a little lick on a Switch 2 cart. Don't do it. they have the same, like, ultra-bitter, like, coating on there. Obviously, it's kind of to, you know, disincentivize, like, pets or, like, young children from kind of maybe eating a cart. But it still tastes bad, and don't do it.
Don't do it, kids. Don't lick the cart. So said, games, I mean, it's really just Mario Kart World, right, Sam, that we have to enjoy with this new system.
Yeah, and that's a good point. I want to give it a little shout out. I do kind of love the little red cartridges right here. They make me happy. But I think that's really a good point about the Switch to launch in terms of, like, should you have FOMO on this or not? Because if you look at the kind of launch titles, we're looking at two launch titles. One is Mario Kart World, which is fantastic. Such a no-brainer, just great launch system or launch title for a new system. And then there's the Nintendo Switch 2 Welcome Tour, which is still, I think, should have been a free game. It's only $10, but like in terms of first-party Nintendo software, that's it. And so, you know, yes, Metroid Prime 4 Beyond is going to come out later this year, and DK Bonanza will be out in July. But, you know, if you weren't able to get, you know, your hands on a unit just now, look, people are going to be playing Mario Kart World forever. That game is fantastic. And I was talking to Nate earlier about this. Mario Kart 8 Deluxe was the number one selling game for the Switch for basically the Switch's entire lifespan. And I can't imagine it will be any different with Mario Kart World and Switch 2.
Mario Kart 8 is one of the best selling games ever made. So Mario Kart World is like down to be the same thing. Let me tell you, I had like basically an hour to play. So I played a one tour of Mario Kart World and a bunch of the actual Welcome Tour stuff. Mario Kart World is just like such an evolution because the tracks are so big. There's so many racers in there. My daughter, who I've been playing Mario Kart 8 with, we're used to like, okay, a smaller amount of players really likes really defined tracks. And these things are so big. There's so many shortcuts. Like it is, I could just see myself playing this game forever. And my daughter really wants to steal it from me. So Mario Kart Worlds.
One interesting thing about Mario Kart Worlds, because you can have up to 24 players in a single race. If you are in like the middle of the pack between like, you know, fourth place and like, you know, 15th or 16th place, it is absolute mayhem because there's so much just everything is happening because there's just people just more carts bunched up in the middle of the pack. It's absolutely nuts. I'm just like really curious to see like the open worldness. I want to see like, you know, how many secrets did like, you know, Nintendo kind of fit in there. And the roster is huge. And I think you need to like do some of the challenges and the secrets to unlock the a lot of the characters. A lot of the characters are just like different outfits of the same character. And so I'm really interested to see like, you know, how much depth there is to that open world, especially coming off of like something like Pokemon Scarlet and Violet, where people were like a little disappointed in like the kind of open world transition that we got from like the previous Pokemon generation.
I will say, Nate, we have played Mario Kart together at the New York and Gadget office. Is this many enough to compel you? Yeah, many years ago. Is Mario Kart World enough to compel you to get Switch 2 at some point?
Yeah, so as somebody who hasn't gotten one yet, it sounds awesome. I love that they're adding this kind of open world vibe to it. So, like, I would be happy to play that. And then I think when you talk about the launch library, like, it's true there's not a lot of first-party stuff. But it's worth remembering that there's a lot of third-party games that were not on the original Switch that are coming to the Switch 2. So if you're somebody who was, like, Nintendo only, all of a sudden you're going to be able to play, like, Cyberpunk 2077 or Elden Ring or, like, a bunch of other games. And we're going to have to test those and see how the performance is. But if you're not somebody who already was, like, a PlayStation or Xbox gamer, these titles may be really interesting to you, right? The kind of, like, less hardcore crowd that maybe bought an original Switch is now going to have the opportunity to play a bunch of, like, highly rated games that they may have missed. So I think that's kind of interesting.
Well, yeah, like but, like, Cyberpunk 2077 is much more of a, like, hardcore single-player game. Also, it's, like, much more mature. You know, I'm thinking about the kids who might be really excited about this who are, let's say, between, like, 8 and 14 or so. So you might not want to, like, hand them an M-rated game quite yet. So what's in it for them right now? Like, I don't know if Mario Kart is quite enough.
It's better quality original Switch games. That's, like, the big
I'll say, unless they had a Switch, again, there's going to be some people getting it for the first time, right? And they'll have the massive old Switch library to tap into as well.
Right. I mean, that's where like backwards compatibility really helps kind of flesh out that lineup, because it, like, for me, it's like my original Switch was getting a little old after a while. And so it's like, I was kind of just been like, I've been hoarding games waiting for the Switch 2 to come out. And so now I have like, Piece of Candy has some old games that like I bought and then never played. And then the other thing is like, because the Switch 2 is more powerful, there are a lot more third-party developers kind of fleshing out the launch library. Granted, these games aren't brand new, like Street Fighter 6 and Cyberpunk 2027, but like, hey, if you, you know, didn't have any other consoles or, you know, whatever, and you suddenly have access to these things, hey, now's a great time to play Cyberpunk 27 on a brand new console. And
it totally is,
From what I've seen, like, the Switch 2 kind of has the horsepower to run these, you know, traditionally like beefier, more demanding titles pretty well. I think some of the like special effects in Street Fighter aren't quite there. And I was playing Split Fiction actually at the flagship store yesterday. And there's a lot of aliasing and kind of jaggies in that game, which is like, you know, it's definitely not the greatest looking version of that game, but it runs, you know, relatively smoothly. So, you know, it's clear that like, you know, Nintendo has gotten a lot more buy-in from third-party developers. And so we're looking at, like, you know, a much more full-fledged, like, library of games. Especially coming from, like, you know, a lot of people thought of the Switch, and this is kind of how I thought about it, as it was a great platform to play indie titles, like, you know, a lot of JRPGs and stuff like that, and obviously first-party Nintendo games. But, you know, if I wanted to play third-party stuff, I'd usually either go to PC or PS5, whatever.
Most definitely. I do feel like part of the selling point now is like, hey, this thing can play more demanding third-party games. I feel like the sort of like wonder of that is going to fade a bit once people see how Cyberpunk performs and how a lot of these things perform, especially as like newer games come in. We've seen the preview of Elden Ring, like on the videos, the textures look bad. It just doesn't look great. But there are some games that are kind of in between, not like super AAA, but more than what the original Switch could handle. So I'm thinking like Hitman World of Assassination, which is the sort of compilation of all the Hitman 3 stuff and actually all the other Hitman games that IO Interactive did. That's one of the best game series ever made. They just like really perfected the Hitman
formula. And it wasn't available on the original Switch as far as I remember.
You had to play it in a cloud. I see it there's a cloud streaming version.
I don't count the cloud. That cloud version was awful. It was really laggy and just performance was just like not great.
So every cloud version on the original Switch just did not. Resident Evil, there were a whole bunch of those. Like, I was never a fan of those. Like, basically buying a full price game, only being able to play it on the cloud. Hitman is a relatively, like, not super resource intensive game. So that's something that could run on this hardware, which from some analysis, I think people are saying it's like equivalent to basically the PlayStation 4 Pro or like on that same level. So I think that's it. Like, where you don't feel disappointed in the new hardware. I think people are going to look at Cyberpunk and look at Elden Ring and be like, this is not look as good as the other systems. And it's hard not to do that. But yeah, I think overall we're pretty positive. Like, Sam, any major takeaways? Because we'll do some brief Q&A with the audience, and then we will talk about Dub.
It's really more of what you like about the Switch that has been refined. The Joy-Cons, the magnetic attachment system, so much better. Even the kickstand, I can show you really quickly. The kickstand, it's not just like a single kind of peg that sticks out. It's a whole kind of, you know,
love it
loop, and it goes all the way up. You could even like kind of hang the Switch if you were in like wanted to hang it on a wall or something, but it also kind of goes into like a kind of an easel kind of style configuration. Just
that original kickstand was an ergonomic nightmare.
It was
totally useless.
It would fall over.
The OLED one was similar to this one. Sam, I actually have a question for you. I know you've only been using it like on your own for a little bit, but like, are you concerned about battery life? Because the rating is pretty weak, if you ask me.
Yeah, the official rating is, I think, 2 to 6.5 hours. But the big caveat is it depends hugely on the exact game you're playing. And so, you know, during the previews, I haven't had a time to like fully kill the battery yet. But in my preview, you know, I played it for half an hour and it lost about 20% battery life after half an hour. So that translates
Which
to
game was that?
Kind of an overall like runtime of about 2 hours, 2.5 hours while I was playing Mario Kart World.
Wow. But
that is like a, you know, I have to couch that in that the brightness was all the way up. I was connected to Wi-Fi. Yeah. We were doing Wi-Fi things. I think we were kind of dancing in and out of game chat a little bit. And so, you know, if you are fully maxing out the system, it's going to be similar to the original Switch's kind of run times, but with, you know, a much more powerful game. And then if you dial down the brightness and some of that stuff, I think, you know, in general, I'm looking closer to like about a 3-hour-ish battery life range as a general average. And then, you know, if you're playing like an indie title, like, you know, Tetris or like, you know, something basic like that, you can probably get much closer to that 6, 6.5 hour. Like
5 hours for Balatro.
I would say it feels. Yeah, there you go. I think like obviously like it's easy to be like, oh, that is like a bad number. And if you're on a cross country flight with no power outlet, then yeah, that's not great. But for most people, like, are you really going to sit there and play off charger for more than three hours or whatever? Like, it's probably fine. Like, the Steam Deck doesn't have great battery, but that doesn't like affect me a ton. So like, I think it's gonna be the same. Like, obviously,
the Steam Deck,
like, number wise, travel. Counting wise, you want it to be more, but like, you can make it work.
It's also really easy to plug these things into USB-C chargers. Like, the things you plug your phones and tablets into can charge these systems too. So it's more flexible than it used to be. One thing I want to quickly hit before we wrap this segment is the mouse stuff is good. In the World Tour, you know, the tour game, there's some mousing mini games, and it really does make you think. First of all, I was able to bounce with the kickstand on my lap, take off both Joy-Cons, use one Joy-Con on my lap for like semi-accurate mousing.
It's surprisingly
like, it
good.
Works. Yeah.
The one thing is that maybe, I don't know if you kind of experienced this, but like, you know, I'm kind of holding the Joy-Con. When you have it on the side like this, because it's like taller than it is wide, it does tend to like, you know, tilt over a little bit, just in my experience. It's not a huge deal, but I am a lot more, like, usually I just hate playing shooter games on consoles because I'm a mouse and keyboard person, but because you can use that, you know, one of the Joy-Cons, and both of them can actually do it, you can use a Joy-Con as a mouse and use, like, the other controller as, like, a regular gamepad stuff. I'm a lot more kind of willing to play shooters on a console instead of just, like, oh, mouse and keyboard only.
For sure. Live update from Trillin. She is telling us she skipped Mario Kart World.
Boo.
I just have to say, you had one job.
That's, I mean, she can always, like, you know, order it or, you know, get it on the eShop, which the eShop is actually so much faster now. It still takes like a second or second and a half to like load up. But once you get into the eShop, it's so much smoother. Like, a lot of that stutter and just like you felt like your console was lagging when you're trying to buy games digitally before, that's gone.
Do you still get points in the eShop for like buying games? Because I remember talking with my brother about like, why did they do that? And his theory was that they are passing on what they're not spending on packaging to you.
There was a point system, yeah. Although I seem to remember that they were phasing that point system out where you would get like coins.
I wasn't sure whether or not that was something that they were phasing out for like the Switch 1 and then they were going to bring back like a similar system for the Switch 2 or what.
Yeah, I this is one of those things I just don't think we know. We have the full picture yet on that one.
One thing I want to say about the store, I think they just built it as a native app, whereas before it was like web. You were basically launching a website, and that led to all the slowdown.
And the devs said they actually tried extra hard to make sure that not only gameplay was smooth, but navigating around the menus and like the news kind of app section, it was just like felt so much smoother. They wanted the whole system to feel a lot more fluid.
So we're going to have more on the Switch 2. Sam is going to be playing. Sam's going to be working on a review. Watch for all our content. We're running a live blog on the site right now where we're putting our live impressions. So you'll see blurbs from all over all the Engadget staff. I'll certainly be putting thoughts on Blue Sky and everywhere. Sam, where can people find you online these days?
You can find me at Sam Rutherford on X or at Blue Sky.
Cool. All right. Thanks, Sam. All right, enough Nintendo talk. Let's move on to Apple. Just a lot of big company news this week. Next week is Apple's next Worldwide Developers Conference, WWDC, or DubDub as we like to call it. Sherlyn and Nate are going to be there on site, and we're expecting a whole bunch of things. I saw rumors about, I don't know, Apple potentially changing how it's naming operating systems. I'm sure we're going to hear more about AI. Nate, what are you expecting at WWDC?
Good question. Per your comment on the names, it sounds like they're going to unify everything with like a year number. So it'll be iOS 26, Mac OS 26. So kind of like the calendar year coming up that they'll be out for most of, because usually the software drops September, October. And then, so it'll be a little less. I don't know who's confused about it, but it is kind of nice to just be like, look, like we don't need to have Vision OS 3 and Watch 11 and yada, yada, yada.
Nate, I am always confused about it. Like, we are steeped in this stuff and covering this stuff, and like, I'm always confused about like, okay, what is iOS now? What is Watch OS now? And like, this makes sense. Like, you treat it like a car, basically. The car year, and you know the model year, what those features have. Yeah.
And by the same token, I feel like, I wonder if they're going to change iPhone naming, because like, an iPhone 17 like means literally nothing, right? Like, okay, great. Like it's a random number that doesn't mean anything. They don't have numbers on any really of their other products. I guess a handful of them do at this point, AirPods and stuff, but like it's confusing and weird. So I don't know. We'll see what happens on that end. But definitely I think it seems like a software change coming.
It is funny though, Nate, that is the one thing where I feel like it makes the most sense, because that's the one like most consumers are actually buying. I'm like, okay, you know where you are in the timeline, right? If you have the latest number, yes, but if you have an older number, you can kind of track back the years. I could see them doing a reset at some point, though, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Samsung did. They, like, jumped from, like, 9 to 20 or whatever, which, if that was in 2020, then there would be some. Yeah, maybe that's what they did. They may have gotten it on years, because the S25 was this year. So that makes sense. Yeah, maybe we'll see. Maybe it'll be the iPhone 26, so they're one number ahead of Samsung at all times. In terms of like actual features, obviously iOS always gets a ton of little updates that can like make life easier if they work properly. But there hasn't been a ton of rumors about what they will be. Most of the rumors are around like a kind of visual refresh for iOS, iPadOS, and macOS. The sort of like one-liners that they're going to look like Vision OS, but I think that's probably an oversimplification. I think it's not going to be as dramatic as people have made it sound like. I think it's going to be a bunch of like nips and tucks that make it a little cleaner and kind of unify some things across all the different OSs, but it's not going to be like it was back in 2013 when they just threw out the old design language entirely and went to the new iOS 7.
And they needed to do that because the original design language for iOS and everything felt ancient, right? Like it was the old skeuomorphic design. It just didn't feel really modern. It's funny that people are talking up this redesign because it really sounds like very little, Nate, from what you're saying. People are saying like, oh, there may be round icons on the home screen and in the control center, subtler changes. It's just going to be a little spiffier. Like, I like the way VisionOS looks, but it also looks exactly like the existing operating systems.
Yeah, nobody's going to like be confused like, oh, is this an Apple device? Like, I think the hype around that is overblown. It's going to be less of a thing than people think it is. And I wrote about this a few months ago when the rumors started going around. It was like, functionally, they have, instead of doing a huge redesign, every year there's a few things that have changed about the way it looks and the way it functions. And so, like, we're pretty far beyond what they released, you know, 10 plus years ago. And they also just did a bunch of customization things, right, where you can finally, like, arrange your grid differently and have, you know, the icon coloring match your background photo and, like, that sort of stuff. So they've done a lot of visual stuff already. So, again, I don't think they're going to just throw all that out. They're going to just refine things a little bit. Mm-hmm, we'll see, though. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm wrong.
So in terms of like what other stuff we expect to see, last year was the big Apple Intelligence debut. Like the year before that was Vision Pro. Last year was Apple Intelligence. And since then, I think people have been mostly disappointed with what we saw from Apple Intelligence. Like the features didn't always work so well. They had the jankiness of like typical AI summaries and stuff like that. That led to some bad news notifications going out from several organizations. And also that Smarter Siri that they notoriously just like delayed. The latest rumor I saw is that that thing is still not ready, not nearly ready. Like, what are we expecting there from your perspective?
Yeah, most of the Apple Intelligence stuff, like, was not all that refined, not all that ready, but it wasn't, like, deal-breakingly, you know, we know it's all kind of new and they're figuring it out. And, like, I don't love that personally, but, like, I don't think people were surprised by that. The Siri stuff, however, was a big public relations kind of mess, especially because I believe that what it ended up finding out is that all the demos that took place during WWDC 2024 were just kind of like video renders of stuff that they wanted to do while it wasn't actually working internally. So even like, you know, last June, this stuff was not like ready to be demoed. So yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see what they show, because I think they have to address that. Like, that's the elephant in the room. But I also don't think I've heard that it's really going to be – they're not going to be able to say, okay, this will be ready for the fall. So I think there's going to have to be some sort of stopgap measure in terms of like, oh, like here's a handful of stuff, but not everything we promised, just to kind of like get them back on track. And maybe they'll have a roadmap and say, okay, like here's the plans for this. But that's going to be probably the biggest thing most people are going to be paying attention to from a feature standpoint, because I think that was – by far the most interesting and useful potential part of Apple Intelligence is, you know, getting that kind of natural language, like having it know the context of your devices. All those kind of features could actually be useful versus like Genmoji and like writing tools, which I don't think anyone is really all that excited about.
And that really seems like the thing everybody is chasing right now. Like a big part of Google I/O was Google showing off like the new super intelligent assistant, right, that can know your contacts and talk to you in a more natural way. We're hearing rumors about that for a Copilot. Like they want it to be a true AI agent. And that's kind of the thing I think that will unlock a lot of these AI tools in more ways. Like I'm finding I don't use ChatGPT any other way other than occasionally I ask Siri something. It's like, do you want me to ask ChatGPT this? And I say yes. And it delivers something that is summarized information that's useful and I can move on with my life. So in that respect, I think we're definitely going to see Apple chasing this stuff too. But the lesson from last year is don't overpromise. I think that's it. Like don't pretend that this is ready just because you're trying to keep up with everybody else, because that whole thing, I didn't think it was the biggest deal in the world, but it turned even Apple fanboys against them. John Gruber, who is quite often like a very big Apple cheerleader, his response to that whole thing, he felt like personally attacked. That
I've never
Apple,
seen him write anything. I mean, maybe it's happened a few times, but for like two decades, like, yeah, this is by far the most scathing response I've ever seen him put out something Apple did. And it was like, whoa, interesting.
He was really pissed off that they showed off a thing and just pretended that it was real. And I think that's a legitimate response. I also think, as we talked about last year, that all these other companies, like Microsoft, rushed into getting Copilot everywhere. Google rushed to show off some sort of ChatGPT competitor, and that they fell on their face immediately. All these companies are rushing out to do things, and Apple, at the very least, all Apple did was show us a Siri that is not quite there yet. They didn't deploy it to us and make us live with it.
And have it not work.
And I do think Apple's taking a slower, more restrained approach. I don't think any of these companies should be jumping on AI as much as they are, but that's kind of where we are at this point. Is there anything else you're expecting from WWDC? Nate, I feel like this is just a big egg on their face event for them at this point.
Yeah, so the other thing that I'm kind of looking forward to is it's been a couple of years since they did stage manager multitasking on the iPad, and it sounds like they're going to do another kind of bigger move forward in terms of multitasking and that sort of thing. I don't know what that'll look like, because like if you have a larger screened iPad, like the 13-inch models, like, yes, the stage manager makes it a lot easier to have multiple things going on. It makes it really useful if you want to plug into a monitor, which is kind of wild, but you can like set up a pretty like desktop-y sort of system. So I'm not sure what it's going to look like when they move this forward, but I know a lot of people are like, it still isn't good enough. So I will be very curious to see if what they do is going to make it more palatable to people. I know it's not going to run macOS. Like, people want that. It still is not in the cards as far as I'm aware. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the next step is.
There are also, we were talking about this like in our Slack, there are rumors that there may be like an iPhone desktop mode that they may show off.
Yeah, that's the other kind of potentially crazy thing. It sounds like if you plugged your iPhone in with a USB-C cable to your monitor, that it would open a similar kind of multitasking, multi-window mode like you'll get if you are using an iPad. That would be pretty wild. And I feel also super niche. Like, I don't think I know anybody who's like looking to plug their phone into a monitor.
It seems very un-Apple. People were bringing up that, hey, that seems very similar to Samsung's DeX, which was the DeX thing was you'd plug it in, you plug your phone into a TV or a monitor, and you can use it as like a mini interface, like a desktop interface. That seems like a Samsung experiment of a bad idea, you know, that you could technically do, but I don't think if consumers will actually want it. But there's still room to, like, I don't know, do some interesting things, like
you can already use your iPhone back camera as a webcam, like wirelessly, right? So you don't even need to plug it in.
Well, this is talking about like making it an actual interface, like turning your iPhone would essentially be a computer, you know, and then you have like other accessories and maybe doing stuff to it, or maybe just expanding what there is to it. They're kind of already doing this with AirPlay. They've kind of done this with AirPlay forever. You can AirPlay your entire iPhone to a TV to stream video or mini or whatever, or even just like show off apps. I could see some room for improvement there in terms of like what AirPlay is.
I think it would be cool if you could AirPlay your iPhone and not have it just be like a vertical slice on a screen, right? Like,
make AirPlay the multitasking way to use your iPhone, and that would be kind of interesting, because also right now if you AirPlay video from a lot of apps, you have to keep that app like open in your iPhone. There isn't room for like background processing, so I could see that being a really, really
especially
nice upgrade,
given how much more powerful Apple Silicon keeps getting every year, right?
Exactly.
It certainly would have the bandwidth to make that work, I would have to imagine.
There's also a lot of, I think in general, a lot of multitasking, right? Like when I do Final Cut Pro projects, right? And you put together videos and you tell it to, okay, do this project. Your iPhone has to sit at that window to actually do the rendering. It's like you have RAM. You have a lot of RAM. You have the ability to at least let me run the rest of the iPhone in standby mode or something, or like low power mode while you chew on this video encode. But don't take my phone away from me for 20 minutes, you know, just to produce a video. That seems like a problem right now. Yeah. Okay. Well, Nate, we will keep an eye out for your coverage. And yeah, take a look at the site, folks. The WWDC keynote is Monday. What's the exact date here? Monday the 9th at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific. Nate and Sherlyn will be there. They'll be live blogging. We'll have a lot of coverage. And we'll see. Maybe we'll do a quick live stream about WWDC after it as well. But yeah, stay tuned for that. Nate, where can people find you online these days?
Yeah, I am on Threads and Blue Sky at Nate Ingram.
Awesome. Thank you, Nate.
All right, so let's talk about what we're working on. And Dev, you tied the loop on your EV saga. Tell us more about this. You finally got the EV of your dreams for under $20,000?
Not of my dreams. I would say there are many compromises going on here. My goal that I set myself to recap was, I think my family needs a second car. Kids are going different places. Summer is getting really busy. I see the need for that. So I've been looking for a while. I set my budget at $15,000, which is, I don't think, too much. You could go under $10,000 and get like a really old used car or like a really, you know, low economy car. But the gap between $10,000 and $15,000, you get more features and whatnot. And I noticed there are a lot of cheap EVs in that range. There's the BMW i3, the Volkswagen e-Golf, all of which have really bad, like not so great range. So people have not typically bought them once they become used. And then I started looking at the Nissan Leaf. And I don't think anybody ever has called a Nissan Leaf a cooled car. The first generation is one of the dorkiest vehicles ever produced. But the Nissan Leaf is like a harbinger of the future. Like the Nissan Leaf was the first low-cost EV produced by a manufacturer. Nissan can't make enough of them. Like they are selling a ton of these things. In 2018 or maybe 2017, they redesigned the Leaf to look more like a traditional hatchback. It has a longer range, 150 miles. A couple years later, they also have this Plus line that can get like 220 miles or something. And I was like, oh, the Leaf is a nice... It's a pretty decent EV, has a good reliability record, range is fine, 150 miles, not like, wouldn't be great for a primary car maybe, but as a secondary car around my neighborhood, totally fine. So yeah, in the past week I've been looking, I finally settled on a 2018 SL trim at just about $15,000, and it came yesterday. So I used that to go drive to Best Buy and get the Switch. So that was just like a big tech day for me. But I bought it through Carvana, and I've talked about Carvana before. I think car dealers in America, buying cars is one of the worst experiences you can have as a consumer. There's not much regulation. Those folks have the ability to lie to you and get you into bad contracts or whatever. Carvana is pretty clear. There's CarMax as well. There are multiple services where you can basically buy your car online and not do the annoying haggling thing or the annoying, trying to get financing from a dealer or something. So Carvana delivered it yesterday. It's pristine. I have like 7 days to try it out before I either decide to keep it or return it, which is also much more useful than like test driving a car for 30 minutes. It's working out well. Like it's still a dorky car. It's still a dad car, but you know, it's a decent EV. It fits my kids' stuff. It fits car seats. I was looking. The EV of my dreams, Ben, would be something like the Polestar 2, which I have noticed is
Actually, I know who makes Polestar. Polestar makes Polestar. I was Polestar, is this a secret subsidiary of one of the major automakers?
Polestar used to be a subsidiary of Volvo. They used to be the performance brand from Volvo. Now it's its own separate thing. They're both owned by Geely, which is a huge Chinese company making cars, essentially. But Polestar has produced some of the most interesting EVs we've ever seen. And the Polestar 2, which is this like high-end sedan, sold for $70,000 to $80,000 when it came out a couple of years ago. That thing is selling used for $25,000 now.
Like, wow. What's the range on that?
Range is like 200 to 300, depending on the model you get. So it's like, if I decide to be risky, you know, if I put my family's budget on the line and the economy didn't worry so much about how terrible the economy was, I'd probably just wait for the Pulsar 2. That would be kind of the used EV of my dreams. I've talked to people who are in the market right now. I'm telling them that $20,000 range is actually a nice sweet spot. You can find the Hyundai Ioniq 5 there. You can find this Polestar. If you want a Tesla, they're certainly in that range. I would not recommend buying a Tesla at this point. There's just a lot to do for many, many reasons. So yeah, I'm now a Nissan Leaf guy. That's going to be my personality for a while. I'm liking it. I think I'm going to keep it. But if you own a Nissan Leaf, if you are new to EVs, you know, hit me up. I'd love to know what your experience has been with them. Since it has such a low range, I can just level one charge, you know, once in a while. And that's going to be fine with me. As a secondary car, that's pretty much all I need. But I see that Polestar. I see those Polestar deals. I'm like, man, just a little more.
I really want to check in with you next month and see how you feel about the actual range, because you know, how old is this car when you bought it?
It's 2018. It has like 30,000 miles. The battery level, it's helpful that most EVs show you like battery health level. This has full bars on its battery. So
okay.
When I got it, it was
relatively low mileage for EV that was what? It's 7 or 8 years old now?
Yep. So that's surprising. It looks pristine inside. I love used cars because you get a much better deal than buying these things new. This was probably a $40,000 car when it was new because it's the high trim with leather seats and all the fun stuff. It has the smarter adaptive cruise control, which is something I have found to be, I need it. We have a lot of long straight roads where I just want to like let the car do some driving for a while. And that's been useful on my Volvo. Seems like it's going to be useful here too. But yeah, it's a dorky car, but I kind of like it. It's a bright red. My Volvo XC90 is a bright blue. So I have a Mega Man sticker for my Volvo. And now I can get a Zero sticker from Mega Man X, the one with the red armor. And we're going to have a nice dorky little car family.
So D-Man in the live stream chat says, I still like Rivians. I want a big boat SUV. The
Everybody
EV
loves
of
Rivians.
My dreams is the Rivian R3.
It's
right
very
now,
cute.
At least.
It's very cute. And that's a lower price than the other Rivians. I love Rivian. Like I spent a week with the R1S. I wish they were cheaper because those things sell for $80,000 to $100,000. The R3 is supposed to be their cheaper one, but it's still going to be like $40,000 to $50,000. It's going to be on the high end. The used market is where it's at. If you're interested in EV, look
just
at
like
cars.
I'm patient with pretty much every other tech purchase, I'd have to be patient to see when a R3 comes up, probably in 10 or more years.
Well, there you go. But until you get there, you can buy a Nissan Leaf, especially this redesign, between $10,000 and $15,000. If you don't get like the higher end trim, you could get like a basic S trim for $10,000, and that is a capable EV that can get you around town and do some occasional road tripping if you needed to. So I'm happy with it.
People tend to only want to be in the car for about 300 miles anyway, and that's I think even less if you have kids.
I would say 150 miles. Like you can do 100 to 150 if you have kids. Then every 2 to 3 hours you need to take a break. You need to stretch your legs, you need to get snacks. When our infrastructure is better, when you can be certain you're going to have an EV charger like on those stop lines, as certain as you can be with a gas station, then I think people will be a lot more, on board with these things. But yeah, if you own a Leaf, if you are happy with a cheap little EV, if you're in the market right now, let me know. Drop us an email at podcastinggadget.com.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our former managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by me, Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Blue Sky and podcasting about movies and TV at thefilmcast@thefilmcast.com.
If you want to hear my curmudgeonly and very patient tech takes, you can find me at Hey Bellman on Blue Sky. Email us at podcast@engadget.com, leave us a review on iTunes, and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts. That includes Spotify.